Our first presenter is Dr. Kimberly Sidora Arcolio. She is an associate professor of the College of Nursing at Ohio State University and director of the Center for Transforming Health of Women, Infants, and Youth, and a faculty associate at the Southwest Interdisciplinary Research Consortium Center for Excellence on Health Disparities Research and Training. Dr. Arcolio earned her PhD in Health Services Research and a Master's in Public Health from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry, Department of Community and Preventive Medicine. Dr. Arcolio's research interests are in health disparities in childhood asthma from the individual and family level, with a focus on the interaction of individual characteristics, cultural and experiential factors, social environmental context, and healthcare system factors. She recently completed a pilot qualitative study that she's presenting results from today and was awarded a five-year, $2.5 million grant from the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine to investigate health disparities between Mexican and Puerto Rican children with asthma. She will be speaking today on illness representations among Mexican mothers of children with asthma, a factor in children's health outcomes. Question. Please help me welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. We were actually presenting some other results from this study over at the Grand Hyatt, so it was a brisk walk. I have no relationships, neither myself nor any member of our team, to disclose. And I would like to acknowledge the funding agency for this study, which was NIMHD under a P20, where I did my health disparities fellowship training, and Dr. Flavio Marsilia is the PI on that P20. For both of my research projects, we call ourselves the Latino Childhood Asthma Project, and my team is made up of myself, Dr. Marsilia, Dr. Luis Zayas, who is the medical anthropologist that participated in this qualitative study, and Rosalia Ibarola, Rochelle Begay, and April Hawthorne, my research team, which are sitting back here in the back corner. And then my community partners, the Scottsdale Healthcare NOAA Clinics, and then for another study, the R01, the Phoenix Children's Breathmobile. So the purpose of this qualitative study, I was really interested in getting mothers in-depth stories and beliefs about their child's asthma. So what's the nature of the disease? What do they feel about medication use? How have their beliefs, knowledge, management strategies changed since they immigrated to the United States? So that we could really get kind of an in-depth look at what's going on and be able to then identify potential targets for doing tailored intervention. So the aims of the qualitative study were to get that perspective from these moms of their lived experience and then also to look at how acculturation might influence these beliefs. And what I'm going to present today are the findings with regards to aim one. So we recruited 20 mothers of children with asthma from those Scottsdale NOAA clinics, and these are school-based health centers that are located in fairly impoverished areas of Scottsdale, Arizona. We began enrollment in May of 2010, and we ended in October of 2010. The interviews ranged about an hour and a half to 2 hours long. And actually, I found out it's really not 19, 18 of the 20 we did in Spanish. Two of the interviews were conducted in English. Interviews were transcribed in the native language that they were conducted, and then those transcriptions were translated to English and verified by Rosalia to make sure that we, you know, culturally kept the content intact. We developed the code book, the interviews were coded using in vivo software, and we are currently holding two-hour team coding meetings to identify the thematic codes from there. So one of the areas that emerged, one of the key ones that I was interested in, is what is the mother's perception of her child's asthma? And overwhelmingly, all of the mothers do not view asthma as being a chronic illness. They view it more as an acute and episodic illness. And the common belief is that when there are no symptoms, there is no asthma. And one of the quotes from the mothers was, "He gets asthma only every 2 to 3 months." The other overwhelming theme is that asthma is unpredictable, and it's very frightening for the mothers. You know, one mother said, "He was sound asleep, and suddenly he told me he could not breathe. And he really tried to get up, but he couldn't because he had a very bad asthma attack." And so that's very frightening for them, this unpredictability that asthma can come on and hit sudden. One minute, he'll be out there playing fine, and then the next minute, he's running in saying, "Mammy, I can't breathe." They acknowledged, though, that it must be treated by a doctor fast. They thought that it's also a very dangerous illness and that your child could potentially die at any moment if they're not treated. It may be inherited through the family. They believe that there is no cure, but they do believe that their children can outgrow the disease. And they also describe asthma as having different types. And it's interesting because typically when they think about the types of asthma, it's usually more related to severity of symptoms. So one mom said, "I imagine there are different kinds of asthma. And they told me that my daughter's was beginning asthma." So they kind of qualify it as beginning or very severe, but it's usually based on the symptoms that they see in their child. Another major theme that emerged was around asthma knowledge, because what we were really trying to get at, for those of you that are asthma researchers, you know that the majority of the asthma education programs are not effective in improving adherence and then ultimately child health outcomes. You can have the best asthma education program in the world, but if we're not talking about and addressing issues that are relevant to the mom, then we're really not going to be able to budge anything. And so we were interested in finding out how much kind of quote-unquote factual knowledge do these moms really have about their child's asthma. And what one of the mothers said, but what applies to your child and what doesn't apply, it's very frustrating. Because I feel like I don't have any more knowledge now necessarily than when he was diagnosed. What I do know is that there's just a variety of medication out there for them. And so they're feeling very frustrated. They're feeling like they're not getting the information that they specifically need in order to appropriately manage their child's asthma. Another mom said, "So a lot of the research I had to do on my own because I felt that I wasn't given enough information at the onset when my child was diagnosed to be able to deal with it on a day-to-day basis." So they feel like they're getting that broad overview knowledge of what's asthma and what the disease is and what the symptoms are, but they don't feel like they're giving that individual tailored knowledge that they need in order for them to individually manage their child's disease. Oh, and I'm sorry, I'm bleeding here. With regards to what they think causes asthma, it's really interesting. Again, what we found, what emerged from the themes is kind of this intermingling of cause and triggers. And so the mothers, when we were trying to gather information about the causes, they identified worry, stress, or anxiety in their child. They thought that other illnesses could cause asthma. So they thought that maybe if their child had the flu or came down with a cold, that caused asthma. Temperature changes. One mom said, in the winter, when it starts to get colder, he starts getting asthma. When it gets hotter and hotter, his asthma goes away. And a lot of the moms identified environmental factors such as dust, pollution, kind of irritant smells such as paint, hairspray, perfume. It was interesting because mothers also thought that their own behavior could potentially have caused asthma in their child if they did certain things when they were pregnant. She said it affects them. One mom said it affects them because they have very low defenses, because they are so little. And what the mothers breathe, what the mother smells, and what she feels, all of that the baby feels. And in particular, one mom was talking about the use of hair dye, and she thought that maybe between the use of hair dye and another mom had taken some antibiotics because she was sick during pregnancy, and they both thought that that was potentially what created their child's asthma. They also think that physical activity can cause asthma. And again, here's where we get into that kind of intermingling of cause versus triggers. They talked about soccer, dancing, running as all causing their child's asthma. They felt that allergies were also a cause. One mom said, "I noticed that in springtime when there's a lot of pollen in trees and flowers, that's the season when he gets sick the most." So again, asthma is not chronic, it's episodic. It comes on certain times of the year or under certain conditions. And again, they mentioned the irritants. We said that the paint used to get us to have asthma because of the lead in the paints that we have, was one of the mom's quotes. Then we also have a theme about the cultural beliefs about asthma, that emerged. They believe that the disease enters through the feet and that you don't ever walk around barefoot. You must always have socks or shoes on your feet. One mom was quoted as saying, "My grandmother said that the disease gets in through the feet and that you should put ointment on the feet when sick." There's also this notion of hot and cold balance. And so if the cold gets in through your feet, then what you do is you use a hot or a warm therapy to counterbalance that and bring the body back into equilibrium. One mom said that we have to have them covered if they're asthmatic because they are more prone to all of the illnesses and that the cold harms them. So a lot of the moms believe that when the child was having symptoms, it was best to bundle that child up, keep them warm. And the kids sometimes resisted. You know, they would throw, one mom was saying, he would throw off the covers, "No, mammy, I'm too hot. And then the mom would want to keep them covered so that they could, again, bring that equilibrium back into balance. Hot things don't let the blood work. I give my child more cold things than hot. I almost don't give him any hot things because he feels hot things get in his chest when he feels bad. And this was interesting because that went counter to what the majority of the moms said. The majority of the moms thought that you don't give cold fluids because that makes things worse. Another mom said that she even warms up her child's milk because when I can give it to him warm, if I give him cold liquids, that's when he gets the cough and that's when the chest tightens up. There was an overwhelming belief that you treat for the majority, unless it's a really bad attack, that you try and treat it at home first. They felt that going to the doctor is really out of a necessity of an emergency situation when the child is really struggling. They feel that, a lot of the illnesses were treated at home. There's this strong belief in being able to take care of a lot of things without having the medical doctors intervene. And that was a pretty strong message that came through. And a lot of these moms, that was the earlier presentation that we did through a roundtable, which was on all of the types of CAM therapies that emerged through these interviews. And every mom acknowledged using some type of what we view as an alternative treatment. And many of them were the folk treatments, the teas, the snake oils, and the herbs. Heavy use of Vicks vapor rub on the feet, the chest, and the back. And then there's this notion that's called contagious magic. Has anybody heard of that before? Yeah, it's the notion of the Chihuahua dog. And 5 out of our 20 moms talked about the Chihuahua, 3 actually implemented it. And it's the belief that if you get a Chihuahua dog, the dogs themselves as a breed are prone to respiratory illnesses, and so the belief is that if you buy a Chihuahua puppy when you have a child with asthma, the dog will then take on the child's asthma from him or her, and then the dog will then suffer the consequences of the disease. And so what this one mom was quoted as saying is that many of the people have asthma get cured with Chihuahua dogs. The dog is like a year and a half old. He's tiny. He runs a lot. And when he runs, meaning the dog, he gets agitated. And that's what I see. When she runs, meaning her daughter, she gets agitated. They are the same. And that's what my husband says, that the dog took the illness from her and she hasn't been that sick. When it comes to, we were also interested in trying to elicit information about the actual pharmacological medications, because we know that there's an issue with parents in general being adherent to giving their children daily controller medications. And I think it's really important as we try to address disparities to understand what those barriers are. What are the issues that parents are identifying? So there's this overwhelming belief, again, that the medication's only needed if symptoms are present. And that's a paper, actually, that my co-investigator, Dr. Zayas, published recently that's called No Symptoms, No Asthma. So again, they don't believe that that child needs to be on medication every day. I see that she's better without the medicine, and then I feel it's not necessary to give her that much medication. There's also worries about side effects, and this has been published in the literature as well. Many parents feel that the steroids will harm their child's bones. We also had one mom that wasn't sure about what any of the long-term consequences may be, that there may be the potential that these medications may cause cancer later in life. There's a belief that there may be a loss of efficacy in the drug if the drug is taken on a daily basis. One of the moms said, he doesn't use it every day because I tell him when to use it, because if you use it every day, it will not work later when you need it. So there's this belief that over time, the child will get used to the medications, and then when they, in their mind, truly need it, the medication won't work. They also have a fear of addiction. One mom was quoted as saying, and I'm also scared for her to keep drinking the medication because they say that taking the medication makes the kids addicted to the treatment. And they're worried then that if the child did outgrow it, now how do you get them off the medications? Another theme that really came through, and it wasn't one that we specifically asked about, but it was mothers' her own worries about what it's like to have a child with asthma. Overwhelmingly, they felt that, they actually used the word deceiving. They felt that asthma was deceiving because due to the unpredictability, you know, where 1 minute your child is fine and literally in the next minute they're gasping for air and they can't breathe. One mom said, he had this episode where the asthma kind of manifested itself very silently. That scared me and that was very frustrating. Almost all mothers had a fear that their child might die due to the asthma. It can turn into something fatal or something pretty tragic if it's not addressed quickly. So that's the fear, I think, as a parent. Another overarching theme for the moms was that they really were afraid that they wouldn't be present when their child had an exacerbation. And that was very concerning to them. One mom said, what worries me the most is that something could happen to them and me not being there to help them. They worry about not having the medication when needed, either physically right there at their hand or because of the cost of the medication. One mom said, the cost of the medicine is very expensive, and for us to say that we can't buy it and she needs it, that was a big concern for this mom. They also worry about over-medicating the children, and this again goes back to the not wanting to give medications every day. One mom said she's very hesitant about giving her son new medication or more medication because it's like, what are you doing? Why can't you just fix this? Why do we have to just keep giving stronger and more medications? They worry about lifestyle limitations for their child. They worry, you know, that they can't play sports. That's always a concern. There was one mom whose daughter is very depressed about having asthma, and her daughter said to her, she's never getting married. She's not having kids. She's not having cats because all of this is going to affect her. They worry about other complications or comorbidities that may arise, either through the disease or through the medication use. One mother thought that possibly giving all of this medication may give her cancer or create stomach ulcers. And there's this sense of hopelessness and frustration. And I think this quote is really telling. She says, I'm desperate because I felt impotent of not knowing what to do, to not be able to control it. A lot of confusion. You know, many times I feel confused. Is it allergies? Is it asthma? You know, they don't feel that they're getting that clear distinction from the healthcare provider either. So what have we learned, and what are the clinical implications from just this small qualitative study? I think healthcare providers need to think about the information they're providing, because these moms clearly stated that they felt that they weren't given the knowledge that they personally needed to manage their child's asthma on a day-to-day basis. So I think we need to think about how do we tailor the messages that we're giving to those parents based on their particular situation. We need to really address the issue of this belief that when there are no symptoms, there is no asthma present. Very, very strong feelings against daily medication use. We need to think about it's not just enough to say, but you need to give your child these medicines every day in order for them to be healthy. We need to come up with a better way of delivering that message. Very high prevalence of folk medicine use. But mothers also have high fear, but also a feeling of a lack of empowerment. They don't feel like they have control over the situation. And so I just also want to thank the mothers who graciously shared their stories with us throughout this study. Thank you.